Welcome to Pracademically Speaking, the podcast where ideas and numbers get real on the ground and in practice. Well, here we are. It's the end of 2024. It's hard to believe we're almost a year into this relaunch of the podcast. And we thought we'd do something a little bit different today. First of all, I'm Brett Buckland. I'm the Director of Planning Research and Statistics for the Department of Corrections here in Pennsylvania. And I have with me today my friend, Jeff Coleman. Say hi, Jeff.
Hi, good to be here.
Jeff is also my conversation partner, and he also is the producer behind the scenes on this podcast. He helps make the magic happen in terms of this podcast. And I thought it'd be fun just to sit down and talk with Jeff today about what we did in 2024 and what we're looking at doing in 2025. In terms of research at the department, just to remind our listeners, the main focus of this podcast is really on educating our listeners on the research out there in terms of corrections, the science behind what we do. We want to inform our colleagues around the country, but also the practitioners, the folks that make our facilities run here in Pennsylvania, who are doing the work on the ground, and kind of inform them about what we know from a scientific standpoint about what works, what doesn't work, what we're learning. So this podcast is kind of like the briefings they used to have during COVID, when COVID was out, and you'd have the daily briefings about here's what we're learning, here's what we know about the vaccine. That's the hope for this podcast, is to really just disseminate research and science in the area of correctional practice. So we did a lot this year, and Jeff, I just want to have a conversation.
I mean, it's a very long list, and I think, look, one of the things that people appreciate about this podcast and what you do is that it isn't policy untethered to data, that they're actually, it's provable and knowable, and there's a science behind it.
Right, but it's on the ground, and it's practical.
Ooh, that's that's a tagline.
Because a lot of it, yeah. The reality is a lot of this stuff is really wonky.
It is.
It's really hard to explain to someone that's not immersed in it daily, which most of
the folks... And I'm usually stopping you saying, what does that acronym mean?
And that's why you're the right. Perfect person to have this conversation with me, because you're not immersed in it, and most of our employees are not immersed in it. They're doing their job, whether it's running treatment programs or guarding the facilities, and so we really try to make this as practical as possible, taking that wonky research stuff and translating it into practical.
Beginning of the year to the end of the year, what were you laying out as a broad framework for what the strategic goals would be?
Yeah, we actually, at the end of 2023, I went with my team through a strategic planning effort, which was the first time we did that. It was really fun. Actually, you, Jeff, created a t-shirt for our team at the end of that process. We went through the process.
T-shirt created for very smart people.
It was a great t-shirt. It said, yes, I believe in pracademical excellence, which is our motto here in our office, is pracademical excellence. Practical academic excellence, just combining those words to pracademic excellence. So we went through this process.
And how many people is that?
We have a team of 11 on this team. We sat down, we had several meetings, just kind of threw things up on the whiteboard. Here's what we think is the purpose of our office, what we contribute to the field, to the department, and here's what some of the things we would like to accomplish over the next year.
So do you start with problems, or do you start with...
We really start with mission statement. So let me read our mission statement to you. This is the mission statement we came up with at the end of 2023, going into this year. The mission statement is, the Bureau of Planning, Research, and Statistics evaluates programs, policies, and practices, produces statistical reports, supports data needs, clearly communicates research, which is what we're doing here, and fosters innovation with excellence and objectivity to advance agency goals through data-driven, scientifically informed decision-making. It's a mouthful, but every part of that is important. Mm-hmm. We're doing things with rigor. We're evaluating. We're communicating it, though, which is what we do in this podcast and our products that we put out. And we're doing that with excellence. And it's,
so, but a person outside of government would say, "Well, isn't that what everybody does? I mean, doesn't every program in the government have that kind of rigorous analysis?"
Not really. I mean, a lot of people
are
just...
That's kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah. No, it's not the case. A lot of people are just focused that's not to say that people aren't doing their job excellently.
Right.
But they're not looking. I think the big thing is they're not looking at the bigger picture. So again, if you're a correctional officer, you're looking at, I'm on this unit, mm-hmm. and I need to keep this unit safe during my shift. If you're a counselor, you're running program and you're trying to run that as best as you can. But we have 23 prisons. We have almost 17,000 staff here in Pennsylvania, and big problems and big issues. And so we're looking at that objectively and as rigorously as we can from a high level. So that's where we started, was the mission statement. We drilled all that long mission statement down to our motto again, which was Pracademic Excellence. And we, thanks, Jeff, we threw it on a t-shirt. And as my Christmas gift to my team at the end of 2023, I gave out that t-shirt, and I wear it all the time. I love that t-shirt. And then from there, where we went was we developed some guiding principles. So these are like our values that flow from our mission statement. Things like expertise. We value expertise. Rigor. We value rigor. Learning. We want to be a team that is constantly learning the science of the field.
So you're open, which, by the way, is not things that people generally associate with departments like yours.
It's a very academic setting, which doesn't fit with the traditional stereotype of what a government agency
does. Nobody's out there saying, prove me wrong
in government. I mean, you think bureaucrats a lot of times. You don't think people free thinking, kind of sitting and brainstorming about ideas. But that's what we value. That's what we do. Objectivity, customer service, efficiency, communication, I've already mentioned. We believe strongly that you can do the best science as possible, but if you can't communicate that to people, it's not going to move the needle. Right. It's not going to change anything. So those are some of our values.
So what are the goals you set out?
The goals.
Out of that.
Yep. So our first goal was that we wanted to do 10 research projects this year.
It's a little ambitious.
It is. It's just about once a month and a half. So we got close to there. I think by my count, we maybe had 9 that we completed. And we wanted to set the bar high. And next year we'll continue to try to set that bar high, meet that bar.
So is that the same number? You're doing a 9 and then 9 or 10 and 10?
We'll probably go 10 again next year. Maybe even try to, my staff would kill me, but maybe go and try to go to 15, push that to 15. I like to set the bar high.
Yeah.
If we don't reach it, that's okay. I mean, let's set the bar high and let's aim for the sky. So that was one thing that we set out to do this year, was do 10 research projects, and we can get into those projects, what we finished. We wanted to do things like professional development. I encourage all of my team to go to a professional development, whether that's taking a college, a graduate course on a statistical method, or going to a professional conference. We also review our reports that we do. We do, catch this, Jeff, we do about 100 reports a month out of this office.
100?
100, about 100 reports on every aspect of our
business.
So
how do you define a report?
A report would be anything like a report of the racial and ethnic breakdown of our population month to month. That could be one report. And so we would give a report of the race categories and how many inmates we have in those categories.
And who gets to see the reports?
Everyone from executive staff, the secretary, we do reports for other jurisdictions, other agencies. Some of them are for the legislature.
Does the general public ever get to see this work?
And most of them are on our public. Actually, I take that back. A lot of them are not on our public website, but there are some that are on our public website. A lot of them are very specific topics that are not on our public website.
Got it.
But in some form, we do about 100 a month. And so what I am always encouraging our team to do is look at those and make sure that we're doing those efficiently, that they're still needed. Because what happens is we get people always asking for new reports, but no one ever comes back and says, we don't need that report anymore.
Right.
They never say, we stopped using that report 6 months ago. So I'm kind of pushing to make sure we can automate the reports where we can. And
are you driving the reports, or are these in response to requests from a legislative committee, from the governor, from the secretary?
Mostly in response to requests.
Okay.
To our customers. We consider our customers. Our customers are the legislature, the public, the senior leadership at DOC here, and pretty much everyone. Yeah. The taxpayers. They can request this data, and so that's our customers. The last thing that I thought was fun that one of my teammates, Michelle, came up with this idea that we set out for in 2024 was to implement a 5% rule, which we took from Google. Google has what they call a 20% rule, which is where you spend 20% of your time a week working on a project that doesn't show any immediate dividends. So it's not something that your boss told you to work on. But it's innovation, it's creativity, it's a space set out 20% to just create new ideas, think about new ideas. So we couldn't do 20%. That's what Google does. They call it their 20% rule. But I made a 5% rule, which translates into roughly 2 hours a week. And so what I asked to set our staff to do is just take 2 hours to work on anything you want.
Is that hard for academics?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I asked our team
pencils down, put your books down, you know.
Yeah, I asked our team, how did we do on that this year?
Right.
And they were all like, oh, that was the hardest thing to do. Because we have so much work that we're responding to people. 100 reports a month, right? Yeah. So it's hard to just set that aside and say, let me just think creatively.
That's
for
a good
2 hours.
Life and family principle probably, too.
Yeah, it probably applies to a lot of other areas as well. So. That was the plan. Do you want to get into?
Yeah, I would love to. So the big nine. And by the way, what was 10 and why did 10 not get done? I think everyone listening to the podcast wants to know.
Well, 10 is, I would say 10 is probably the one that we're currently working on. So we started it, we just haven't finished it.
You have a few days left.
We probably won't get there. In all fairness, we probably won't get there.
Okay, give me the layman's definition of what parole intensive supervision is. That's number one.
Yep. Parole intensive supervision was the first one we worked on this year. And that was looking at parole agents have developed these special caseloads for individuals who are high risk for violence. These are high risk parolees. And it's more intense supervision. So if a parole agent normally has maybe 50 or 60 parolees on their caseload, these intensive agents have maybe 10 or 15. Okay. So they can...
More monitoring
and attention. Because these are people that need a closer eye on them.
And what were you looking to find?
And we were looking to find if that actually reduced violence.
And did it?
Violent recidivism. So we did not find, and this is going to be a theme here, it's hard to find things that work. We did not find an appreciable reduction in violent crimes for those who were on the parole intensive supervision caseload. So that was the takeaway.
Before we get into the other areas, when you do research, the departments of corrections around the country, is that immediately going into a bank of information that you can compare kind of their findings state to state, or is everyone not studying obviously the same topics in the course of a year?
There's no bank per se. There are other studies out there. So we typically will do a literature review and look at what other states
have done.
But
a lot of this is new ground.
But most of it is new ground. We do a lot more than other state departments of corrections. We're prolific even with 10.
So this one doesn't sound too wonky. Inmate visitation. What were you trying to find out there?
There we were trying to find out whether inmates receiving visits helped to make them succeed when they got out. In terms of recidivism.
And I would guess that it helped.
It did. That was one where it did help. Now, the interesting thing for there, and I think we probably talked about it earlier on a podcast this year, one of the questions was whether in-person versus virtual visits had any differential impact. Okay. Because during COVID, we had to move to virtual visits, and a lot of folks argued, oh, well, you're watering down the visit experience because when I sit here, Jeff, with you, it's a different experience than when I see you on a screen.
For sure.
But what we found there is that it actually, in terms of recidivism, didn't make any difference. Even though getting visits, regardless of what type, reduced recidivism.
Let's do some rapid fire here. Yep. Recidivism rates by day of the week released.
Yep. So we looked at whether the day that you were released from prison.
Like in a Monday, week,
Tuesday, Wednesday? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And the theory there was, actually, Secretary Harry brought this away from her European visit to the prisons there. They were working on a similar project. The question was, if you're released on a Friday, are you going home and partying because it's the weekend? Versus if you're released on a Monday, you're in the beginning of a work week. There's not much happening. Maybe there is, maybe there's not.
What do you find?
Right. No impact. Again, it doesn't matter what day of the week you're released.
Okay, here's a big one here. VRI, Violence Reduction
Initiative. Violence Reduction Initiative. This was our in-prison. This is in the prison, not in the community. Violence Initiative to reduce assaults in prison. It's basically a group-based approach where if one person commits an act of violence that's prohibited, then the whole block gets locked down. So it's taking peer pressure to try to keep people in line, because if one person does something, everyone gets punished in a sense. They all get locked down.
In a word? What did you find out?
We found out that there was some evidence that was effective.
It's
that's
like,
not one
it's
word.
It's like five words.
you're asking some an academic to put things in one word.
That should be thumbs up.
It mixed, but some okay. Positive, enough to justify going forward. With
what
that
about
one.
This relocation study?
Relocation study. That was another one we probably talked about before, too. That is the idea of whether you return back to your home area or to another part of the state when you're released from prison.
Hmm.
We actually did an experiment on that for those who volunteered for the experiment. If you're from Philadelphia, you got a chance, if you're in the treatment group, to go back to Philly, or if you're in the comparison group, to go
to Erie
or Pittsburgh, right. We didn't do it during football season because we didn't want to send Steelers fans to Eagles territory and Eagles to Steelers. Bottom line there is we did find an impact from relocation there.
I'll bet.
We found a small reduction in recidivism for those who were relocated. That's the takeaway from that one.
What about the therapeutic community evaluation?
Therapeutic communities is a drug and alcohol treatment program that we've done for years here. It's a special unit where the whole unit is focused on drug treatment.
Hmm.
They live together, and they go through treatment together, and they live on that unit, and it's a therapeutic unit.
And you found?
No difference in recidivism for that one.
Kind of a theme here.
Yeah.
Impact of granting early parole release and parole supervision conditions.
This is one that postdoctoral fellow Michael LaForest, who worked with us, is working on. He's finished. He's got the results. Basically looking at if the parole board paroles someone at their first parole hearing or they deny them and parole them later, does that have any impact? And what he found there was that there's a slightly higher recidivism rate for those who got paroled at their first hearing.
Let's go. Two more to make nine. The SIP HOPE program, or SIP HOPE program.
This SIP HOPE program is a supervision approach within the SIP. It's now called the State Drug Treatment Program. It's a drug treatment program, and we added a disciplinary component of that where it's the recent episode where we talked about swift, certain, and fair.
Right.
It's basically that idea of swift, certain, and fair. Here's the rules. You violate the rules, you get a quick return to a prison for a timeout. That's the idea. We did find a reduction in recidivism for that.
Interesting.
Yep.
Final one, medication-assisted treatment, MAT evaluation.
And that's the most recent one that we...
And still ongoing.
Is that the 10th? That's the 10th. Yep, that is the 10th. That's ongoing.
Okay, you're
one,
right.
Two, three,
it is 10.
Four. Yep, 10. Yep. So that is the 10th. We are not finished that. We probably will not finish that in the next couple of weeks. And that is looking at... medication-assisted treatment is like Suboxone, Vivitrol. These are treatment for substance abusers reduces their cravings. So like Vivitrol is a shot they receive once a month. Suboxone, you may have heard of. That's a pill that they take. And it's a form of treatment for substance use. We're looking at a cost-benefit analysis here because the shot costs about $1,200 per shot. Per inmate.
It's pricey.
So it's pricey. Like a lot of drugs, it's pricey. So we're looking at the return on investment on that. If we invest $12,000 per inmate per shot, are we getting that in terms of reduced recidivism, reduced death, mortality from overdose deaths, reduced substance use, lower relapse, that kind of stuff.
So let's take a quick break here, catch your breath, and when you come back, we're going to do a very fast run-through of what you see coming up in 2025. It'll be
perfect.
A bonus for our listeners.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
Welcome back to Pracademically Speaking. You're listening to a fun conversation, the first part of our podcast today with Dr. Brett Buckland, focused on the 2024 strategic plan and what the Bureau of Planning, Research, and Statistics found out and all the information they churned out. Now we look forward to 2025, and we've got, Brett, a big 13 list here. This is a very ambitious list, which your team is probably going to be very happy when you start adding things to this long list.
Yeah.
Let's just run through them, okay, just to give our audience a preview.
Well, the first one's easy because we talked about it before the break, and that's finish the medication-assisted treatment evaluation. Yep. So we're going to finish that. I explain what that is. I don't need to explain that further. But stay tuned because we're going to do a whole podcast episode on that next year. Mm-hmm. And I promise that that's going to be a very interesting study when we're done with it.
Stay tuned. What about number two here? Evaluate parole violator treatment curriculum.
Yeah, this is the treatment curriculum for individuals on parole who are returned for a parole violation. So they're coming back to prison for violating the terms of their parole. There's a specific, unique curriculum that they receive, a treatment curriculum to help rehabilitate them, and we're going to evaluate that.
You want to find out if it's working
or not. We're going to find out if that's working.
What about vocational programming?
This is another one. We do a lot of vocational programming in our facilities to prepare inmates for reentry and give them a skill.
And is some of that rebounded after COVID? I mean, was there a lull in some of that?
Yeah, a lot of that slowed down during COVID.
So is it difficult to evaluate without all of?
We have to kind of look pre-COVID, post-COVID. We have to cut out that COVID period because a lot of the work slowed down during that time.
You need to give your team a little extra time on that.
Yeah.
What about the T for C, the Thinking for Change evaluation?
Thinking for a Change is another treatment program that we offer. It's a form of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is basically the idea that how you think relates to how you act.
Sure.
So if you have antisocial thinking and attitudes, you think the police are evil, you think everyone deserves it, I deserve certain things, then that's going to affect your actions. And so Thinking for a Change is a program we offer that we prescribe to inmates who need it to kind of reprogram the way they think. And here again, we want to find out, like most of these, is it working? Is it reducing recidivism? Is it having the intended outcome?
Well, some big questions there. What about restrictive housing? Restrictive housing units, the RHU evaluation.
This one we've talked about on the podcast this year too. This is the name that people might commonly know as solitary confinement, but we don't call it that anymore. Not a nice name. We call it the RHU. And there's a lot of political interest around this. There are a lot of folks that are saying we could cut back the use of the RHU, that there's detrimental impacts for people being in solitary confinement. And so we want to test that out. We want to see what's the sweet spot in terms of where's most effective for responding, because there's reasons that folks are in the RHU. Often they've done something bad, but at the same time, we don't want to keep them longer than necessitates for reducing, keeping the prisons safe, basically.
What about veterans, veteran service unit?
This is another specialized unit that we offer in our facilities for military veterans.
And we're learning a lot about this.
We are. And a lot of what leads military veterans here is PTSD.
A different set of challenges.
Sure. Yeah. PTSD and the challenges that come with that. We also know a lot of military veterans, because of PTSD, have problems with substance use. And so it's, like you said, unique set of challenges. But there's a lot of interest in this. Obviously, we want to take care of our vets. And so
Do you go outside of the immediate population? Do you go look at veterans courts or other?
We won't in this. This is a specific program in prison. But we usually have veteran staff that run it. So they have that camaraderie.
Sure.
It's military veteran staff who are running the program. And so they can relate with the military veteran inmates in terms of those unique challenges.
Seven more. Pell Prison College Course experiment.
This is going to be really, really, really interesting, and I'm sure we'll do a podcast episode on this. It's the only experiment of its kind in the country. It's the first and the only. We're working with the University of Maryland and Drexel University to do this, and we're evaluating the benefit of receiving Pell-funded college courses in prison. Pell-funded college courses while you're in prison. And what the impact of that is. It's a it's an experiment, and nobody's ever done this as an experiment design before. So there's a lot of interest in that.
Well, this is a favorite one of yours, Little Scandinavia.
Little Scandinavia.
What do you hope to learn?
Yeah, Little Scandinavia.
It's been studied a lot, right?
It hasn't been studied a lot, but there's been a ton of interest in it.
Okay.
I'm told by SCI Chester that they get probably 2 to 3 visitors a month to come see from all over, delegations from other countries even, from all over the U.S. It's we've talked about it again on another episode, but it's basically a kinder and gentler type of unit that's modeled after a Scandinavian type of prison unit. The staff interact better with the inmates. They sit down and eat meals with them. The physical landscape of the unit looks
kind of
a lot
IKEA
friendlier.
Prison, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I hope, Jeff, to get you out and see it. It's actually pretty cool to see.
I would love that, yeah.
So we're going to evaluate that. That's an ongoing project, multi-year project.
That's
and
cool.
We should have some results. It's ongoing, so we should have some results here in 2020.
So this year, you had something pretty special partnering with Penn State, Innovation Day.
Yes.
Brought a lot of thinkers and practitioners into, put them in a building, and you squeezed a lot of ideas out of
them.
We
sure did.
That day. What do you hope to study from that day?
Well, we did pack a lot into that, and Penn State produced out of that a 75-page report. Hmm. And so we're still very much going through that report. And what I hope to do in 2025 is to take 2 or 3 ideas from that whole day and actually test them, run a test on them, like some of the other ideas we talked about today. That we generate 2 or 3 ideas out of that 75-page report in that day, which was, by the way, it was a really awesome day to bring academics and practitioners together.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. It was exciting.
Yeah.
Research on lifers. Boy, that sounds like a heavy, challenging topic.
This is a broad topic, and it's a politically interesting topic because there is a lot of discussion about, in Pennsylvania, you may or may not know, we're one of the few states where life means natural life. Hmm. Other states, if you get a life sentence, you at some point can have a chance of being paroled or released. If you receive a life sentence in Pennsylvania,
life means life.
Life means life. Yeah. There's only one way out of here if you get a life sentence, other than if you get a pardon, and that is, you know, dying.
How big of a population is that in Pennsylvania?
It's about 5,000 inmates, and so there's
wow.
a lot of interest in the legislature and in the public about rethinking life without parole. Mm-hmm. Especially for elderly inmates, our population's aging. And so does a 75-year-old who received a life sentence still need to be in prison when they have a very little chance of, you know, very little chance of hurting anyone at 75 or 80? Maybe they're in a wheelchair. Maybe they're, you know, they're incapacitated with some kind of disability at that point. That's one population. The other population of lifers is what we call the getaway drivers. These would be people who they're driving a car, let's say on a crime spree. The passenger.
So this is literally drivers you're talking
getaway
about.
Drivers. Yeah. And the passenger goes into a bank, goes to rob the bank, but ends up shooting and killing someone.
Right.
The driver just thought that they were along for the robbery, and now the driver's charged with murder. He's doing a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Because of the way our laws are structured
right.
with
another
accomplices.
Another name for that is felony murder.
I see.
And so, again, the General Assembly, some in the General Assembly have proposed, let's take a look at that, and maybe felony murders don't need to spend the natural life. Maybe they get a chance after 20 or 30 years of parole.
I suspect we're going to hear a little more about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do a rapid fire here of the last three. The strong R tool validation.
The strong R, we also did an episode on that this season, this past year, is our risk assessment tool, where we're assessing inmates for their likelihood or risk of reoffending and their needs that we can address through treatment.
Okay.
That's a brand new tool that we just implemented in the last couple of years. So what I would like to do in 2025 is to actually validate that now that we have enough data on it to make
sure. Showing some promise, now you need to.
Exactly. Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Ramp up BetaGov trials again, it says.
BetaGov was something that we were doing pre-COVID, and I'm trying to bring it back on force in 2025. And it's basically our idea box for staff, okay, where they can propose any idea, and we'll test it, and we say as long as it's legal, ethical, and not cost prohibitive, we will guarantee you that we will try it.
Wow.
So any of our 17,000 member staff can write into our hotline, our email address, and say, I want to try cutting food back to twice a day instead of three times a day.
Right. Or which you're not proposing, by the way.
Some of them are.
Is that an idea?
That actually was an idea.
Huh.
Some of them are warm and friendly ideas. Some of them are tough ideas.
You're right.
And what I always say is I'm more interested in whether it works or not.
Okay.
And of course, it's got to be legal, it's got to be ethical, and it can't be cost prohibitive. But if it meets those three, we'll try anything.
Okay.
We were doing that before COVID. I want to bring that back in 2025. It's called BetaGov, and we're going to do that this year.
So the final recommendation that you're going to be looking at coming up, doing some work on in 2025, is this surveying your executive staff early in the year and ask them for their new research priorities. So this is not studying the prison population.
It's not a study. This is just really to help develop the studies. We did this last year.
And why do you do that?
Because there's too many things to study. And so we need to have our bosses tell us what their priorities are.
Okay.
Because we went over 10 things. I could come up with a list of 100 things or 1,000 things that we do to study. But we have to triage those things according to what's most.
So when you say
to highest
the
priority,
bosses, I mean, is this
the secretary, the deputy secretaries, the other directors like myself of the bureaus?
Right.
So we'll survey them and we'll say, give us your top three programs, policies, or practices in 2025 you'd like to evaluate.
So does that shuffle then the list that we just discussed?
That'll shuffle a little bit and augment it and may move some things to the top and others to the bottom.
Okay.
I have in front of me the list that we did in 2024, and those were the things that we went over. That's why we did the visitation study. That's why we did the parole intensive supervision. That was on the list of our senior leadership last year. But things change, as you know, all the time in politics. They change all the time. And so last year's priorities aren't necessarily this year's. So we're going to survey them in early 2025 again, say, give us your top three programs, policies, or practices.
Mm.
We'll reshuffle that list a little bit, although we'll keep doing the things that we talked about already. But there'll be new ideas on this list, new things that, and it'll give us many podcast episodes to talk about next year. So
it seems like, Brett, that the taxpayers are getting their value out of this department.
I hope so. I value that, and that's what I push our team for. We're getting paid, and I think we have to justify why do you have a research office? It's got to contribute something, and I think science does help organizations be better at what they're doing. And so I hope that we're a good sell.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to leave the conversation here. This has been very interesting to me, and I think interesting to a lot of people, not just people in the field, to see how these ideas come to life. So thanks for the back and forth.
Thanks for talking to me today.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.